is the Saturday Supplement. I'm Frank Lewis. Today, 79-year-old sheep farmer, pony man, a man with endless stories of deer, swans, salmon, eagles, and all of nature. Jeannie Tagney lives in Geramine at the eastern end of Cumann Dubh, the Black Valley, on the southwestern corner of Killarney's Upper Lake. Jeannie is bringing me to his special places. Today's programme was recorded on November the 20th. Your story on Jeannie's special places. For later programmes, write Frank Lewis, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. Text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 7123666. In this first hour, we'll visit the ghost village of Dugra, where there were evictions and an eagle stole a salmon. At Durawad, along the Mass Path, the oak woods here were busy. At the quay at Lord Brandon's Cottage, part of the Killarney day trip for nearly 300 years. And we'll begin, we are beginning, at Jeannie's home at Geramine, where he was born and has lived all of his life. Jean, the bull-like bellowing of a red stag is intimidating, even at a distance. But you have had a red stag bellowing here in the yard.
I had, yeah, early October, at mating season. They came into the yard here at night. What attracted them was I had some cat in the shed. I'd weaned off the calves from the red stags. They had the cows and it attracted the stags. They came in here at night.
More than one of them?
Oh, there was a couple of them there. And they gave the whole night here in the yard and they belong.
Yeah.
And they got the cattle answered them too. Because between the cattle and the red stags, it went down for the whole bloody night.
When was that? How long ago was that?
Oh, this was only in October, October.
You didn't send Molly out to hunt them away or anything, no?
I was very tempted to go out myself.
Yeah. Well, because they'd be dangerous, though, wouldn't they? I mean, especially during the rush, they'd have a go at you.
I caught a stag one time and there was a holly tree there. There was a holly tree and I stood on one side of the holly tree. I caught him by the two horns and the hand on each side of the holly tree.
Yeah.
And I held him for a while because the dogs were at him. And I held him till I got the dogs away from the stag then. When I got the dogs away, then I left off the stag again.
Well, and you weren't afraid that, especially during the rut, that the blood is up and...
Well, I was quite safe. This was after the rutty season, but yeah. I was quite safe with the holly tree because I had a hand on each side of it and he couldn't stir. So I'd him like a voice up against the holly tree.
When you released him, did he try to have a go at you?
No, he ran away. But I didn't release him till I got the dogs away first.
Yeah.
Because that's how I caught him, because the dogs were at him, you see.
Living with you here, your son, Donnac, Molly, and a new arrival, Roisin Mary, a lively house.
It's lovely to have a baby in the house. She's such a pleasant baby. She'll smile at you all the time. And if you ask her to smile, she'll smile at you too.
Oh, she's great. I mean, even when we went into the house there, into the kitchen, she's smiling across now.
Yeah, she's a lovely little kid altogether.
She is indeed.
She's the seventh generation here of the Tangies here in Geramine.
And is this the house? Were you born in this house?
Oh, I was. Yeah. I was born in this house. And this is a new building then down here. That was an old house here at one time. Mm-hmm. And we knocked the old house because the old house, it was hard to keep. Mm-hmm. So we knocked at the old house and we built back in the new again. Mm. And the eastern side of the house, and that's a new city home as well.
As a sheep farmer, with the first talk of introducing the white-tailed eagles, you were afraid they might take lambs. Jeannie, later other farmers accused you of feeding the eagles.
Some people thought I was feeding them. Because
were you?
I wasn't feeding them, but as I have said, there was an ad animal dying, mm-hmm. and I wasn't burying the animals because and the start eagles were very hungry. They weren't able to provide themselves at all. I remember a time at this apple tree here in the back of the house. Mm-hmm. I remember to have 14 eagles there one morning.
14?
14 eagles in one bunch. They smelt the sheep in the shed.
Yeah.
And they were inquisitive, of course, to find out what was on the shed.
Yeah.
And that's what brought them around. But then God, if a lamb died, they won't give you time to bury him. They'd eat him one couple of hours.
Right.
I've seen it, and a lamb die in the morning, and they go away to the mountain. Mm-hmm. When they come home, they'd have that lamb eaten. There'd be nothing left for the wool.
Was it you or Molly or Donnac were pointing out there, Roisin Mary, looks very like Mary, your late wife.
That's it. So a lot of people say that, all right, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me, a number of years ago, about this time of the year, your late wife Mary had gone away with her friends for a few days, and you told me you were in awful trouble.
Almighty God, I was left minding the turkeys just before the Christmas, maybe this time of the year. Yeah. I remember well, we had 10 turkeys.
And you were told that was the one job you had to do.
That was my last warning, yeah. to feed the turkeys, yeah. to give them all they wanted and give them water and all. Yeah. So no problem. And just as I went out, on the second morning, I went out. All I could see was a cloud of feathers.
Yeah.
Jesus, I went in anyway. So nine of the turkeys dead, nine of them, and one alive, he was all torn.
My gosh.
And he was the right half.
I remember you were saying to you at the time that you were in awful trouble. So how did you handle it? What did you do?
I phoned Mary, but when I phoned Mary, Mary got an awful fright too, because she thought cause something else was wrong, and there was something in the house.
Yeah.
So I told her, yeah, and...
You told her at the time, I think, that you had good news for her and bad news.
I did, yeah. It's not in the house anyway, I said. And the bad news is the turkeys are all dead. Well, you know, she took it very well. She said it wouldn't be a lot worse than the house. That can clear me to work.
Jeannie, over all of your adult life, you also worked as a pony man, taking visitors up the gap from Kate Kearney's.
I've taken them from all over the world through the Gap of Dunlow. A lot of Americans. I took some of the Canadians through the Gap of Dunlow.
My.
Oh, I did, yeah. There was another man and lady too that I took through a couple of times.
What kind of people were they? What were they like?
They were nice people. They didn't understand an awful lot about the animals at all. He had something to do with the grants we were getting when he was saying the sheep. He said to me, they have four legs. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But he said, you're getting a grant for the four legs.
Yeah.
Not at all, I said. You're getting a grant. You're getting a grant for one sheep.
Yeah.
No, he said, four legs.
Yeah.
And I took a long time to explain to him. I said, the sheep have an ear tag.
Yeah.
And that is what we are getting a grant out of.
Yeah.
So he had to give in to me in the finish.
Yeah. It's a combination, it always has been for you, a combination of tourism.
Oh, it was always there, yeah. I remember my father was doing this trip before me even, with the pony and trap. Yeah. Back when my father was doing it, there were a lot of riding ponies at that time going through.
Yeah.
But we've no riding ponies left now, we're not allowed, no insurance for riding ponies.
So it's all just pony and trap.
We're down out to pony and trap.
Yeah.
And look at the have insurance on the pony and trap.
And the insurance got very expensive now, hasn't it?
Yeah, they're very expensive, yeah.
Yeah. Roisin Mary is the seventh generation.
She is, yeah.
So way back to where? The middle of the 19th century?
I even had them, some of these people saying that they brought people through the Gap of the Law in 1780. It was horseback that time in 1780. Mm-hmm. No, English Island and Ireland that time, it was all side saddles.
Gosh. For men and women?
Oh, yeah. All side saddles.
Side
saddle. And the side saddle, it was very, very hard on the horse. The horse's back would get sore. It was unbalanced all the time. Like.
Mm-hmm. How would you compare early life to life now here in Garamain?
When we get in the electricity, to switch on, put it, go to the wall and just switch it on, the light there on the spot.
When was that? I remember writing a piece for the Irish Press at the time, talking to some of the people way back at the end of the valley, the O'Sullivan sisters.
78 and 1980.
Yeah. And when did the phone arrive here?
I couldn't after that. It was a good bit after when the phone arrived.
Yeah. You used to have card games way back here every night.
Oh, we used every night, yeah.
Yeah. And you're now bringing that practice back?
Trying it anyway.
Yeah.
I wonder will it work though. It's very hard to get people together again.
The old school is now being used as a community centre.
They're tying it up and you're tying it.
You sing to Roisin Mary every day.
Yeah, it could be only diddling mostly. Diddle, 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 diddly doodle, diddly amma diddle, diddly doodle, diddle, diddly diddle, daddy dum. Now, Roisin.
Very good.
The sun is on the rise. Yeah.
So Dux is waiting for us down at the quay, so we better go and talk
to him. Right, we'll go down to Dux. Yeah.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
Special places. We're out at the southwestern end of Killarney's Upper Lake, between the ghost village of Dougra and McCarthy's Island, with Donald Dux O'Donoghue of the Gap of Dunloe traditional boat tours. Coming along the way there, Jeannie, you were mentioning a little cave and a person who went to live there.
A man lived in this little cave one time. He gave his early life in Australia, and he came back and he lived in that cave afterwards. He was known as Salt Hands.
And you were saying he brought back a big trunk from Australia with him?
He brought back a trunk, and they all talk he had a trunk of money. No, what he had inside the trunk was big otter traps. And otter trap, you know, the trap yourself, they were so big.
Yeah.
And he was trapping the otters and skinning the otter then. And back at that time, they were getting £14 in otter skin. Big money, like,
yeah,
to get £14 in otter skin. And that's what he was at. And he was also a fisherman. And he lived in that cave, and he had his boat there too. And eventually he got drowned there. He was out there storming warning, and I reckon that he was playing a salmon. Boat got turned upside down, he got drowned there.
Donald, Dux, it's a stunning morning. We're out here, just out from Dougra. We're on the lake. The islands are outside us. The sun is shining. The reflection, the first snows of the winter are above us. Yes. It's a wonderful morning. What do you tell the visitors about Dougra?
Dougra, it's part of a great place for fishing in the Upper Lake. Dougra. It's there's a lot of nicky-nacky places here, Frank, in the Upper Lake, you know. That great friend of mine, Sandy Hayes.
It's a neighbour of mine, a friend of mine too.
A friend of yours, yeah. He said the Upper Lake is like embroidery.
Embroidery?
Embroidery for fishing, Frank. It was all nicky-nacking around the place. Yeah. And you'd have to know where you are and know where you were going more especially. Yeah.
Dean, one of your sons was fishing out here on the lake.
He caught a perch. We usually throw back the perch, you see.
Yeah.
Take his perch off of the hook on the end. Just throw him out. If he did, whoosh, with the eagle was overhead. The eagle caught that perch before he sunk. The eagle can't swim at all. But he took him with the claws and off he went.
Aye.
Came back again after about 10 minutes looking for another one. After that, he knew the boat. He was out another day with the boat. The eagle was there. He following him. If he caught a perch or something again, he'd throw out his perch, and the eagle was that fast, he'd nearly throw the cap off of you, whoosh, like that. Mm. And he'd catch him before he'd sink.
Yeah.
Because great speed, wasn't it?
Yeah. Over the years, up to a generation ago, there were a number of men who earned their living rod and line fishing in the Killarney Lakes. One of them was my friend and neighbour, Sandy Hayes. Sandy and his uncle, Mickle, claimed special rights here, and nobody was fishing earlier than they were.
And that's for sure, Frank. If you came out in the morning, a great friend of mine, Mick Shea, Jerker, Mick Shea we used to call him, Mick, it might make an early dark in the morning. He might come up at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Two boys would come out at 7, Mickle and Sandy.
Yeah.
And they'd see Mick out. The following morning, they'd be up at 5. And it'd be black dark, and all you'd hear, Frank, was a man setting his rod up with a little squeak of the reel, and that's all you'd hear.
Yeah.
That's all you'd hear.
But why do they want to be out so early? What difference does that make?
They wanted to put the heat on and Mick. They wanted to put the heat on Mick, and they were putting the heat on the wrong man, you know, because Mick was a devil, you know. He was a great bit of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But they reckoned that they'd have one side of the lake, Mickle, and Sandy'd have the other side of where was Mickle going to go, you see. Or Mick Shea going to go.
Donald, life as a rod and line fisherman here was precarious. Your weather barometer here was the swans. You had a pair
They were great. They were great, the swans. And mighty goodness, a swan could give you a couple of weeks' notice at least for a flood. I remember the time of Hurricane Charlie. The two old swans, they went down up, and they went up as far as Lord Brandon Cottage, and they passed it up and went up to the bridge. They even got out in the road above the bridge, and the people were giving out then, that it could the people feeding the swans, making pets of them, that would feed them, and I shouldn't be doing it, bringing the swans out in the road, fighting all the horses and everything else. Mm. This went on for a couple of weeks, and then the next thing, Hurricane Charlie came. Flooded the whole place, of course. I remember I had a garden there myself, and I had a pit of silage. It took everything. Yeah. It took the pit of silage, took the garden. I remember I had cabbage. I hadn't left a head of cabbage. All, everything went out the upper lake. But as soon as the flood was gone, off with the swans down the lake again. I knew about the flood. Mm. As soon as the flood was gone.
Did you know, did you realise when the swans were up high what was going to happen? Did you?
At that time I did not.
You didn't, yeah.
So we believed because the people feeding the swan making pets of them that. Yeah. No, I did not, but I didn't after that. I followed him up after that. The swan had, he had marks. The swan had come to the mouth of the river, come up a small bit for a little flood. And for the big flood then, they'd go way up to Lord Brandon Cottage. If you saw them come in there, you come in to look out at, move on the animals into high ground, there was a flood coming. Mm.
Donald, John Buckley, his brother Don, he got nobody in the lakes of Killarney, got more salmon than Donny Buckley.
Yeah.
Do you know? Great fisherman and gentleman at the same time.
You say that as if you're surprised, like the man could be a good fisherman and a gentleman.
Oh, well, a fisherman, you see, Frank. I got him on a blue and silver, but sure, it mightn't be a blue and silver at all. My father's sister, husband, got a salmon out there between the Arbutus Island and the Coffin Rocks.
Yeah.
And he was 23 and a half pounds. And didn't he get a massive heart attack that night and died from the excitement of the whole thing at the time. And that's a long time ago.
So you'd want to be careful.
You'd want to be... Anything over 20, cut the line.
Genie. Recently, the eagle had the nest over on the mountain. 2 point martins in there. They were close by. They went up in the bush. An ivy bush. You have the berries that's in the ivy bush. And they're eating the berries off of the ivy, and geez, they were quite close to the eagle's nest, and the eagle seen them anyhow, and there was auctions with the eagle trying to hunt after pine martins.
And did you succeed in hunting them off?
I'd say she succeeded all right. She nested away for the spring after.
As you're talking about the pine martins, Frank, I was going in to get them in there a couple of months ago, and the next thing, a needle shot over my head onto the ground and picked up a pine marten with the claws and took off with him.
And the very start when the eagles came in here, I seen the eagle to threaten my dog.
Oh yeah?
I did, they threatened my dog and the dog had afraid of them. And I had the dog sent away a half mile away from it, bringing down sheep, and the dog went under the stone, and I had to go away myself, away out the mountain, bring down the sheep.
The eagles now, I mean, there's no great fear of them anymore. There's nobody fearing they're going to lose lambs or anything like that.
Well, not that we know of anyway. That we know of, but the thing is, like, if an eagle kill a lamb and close by to you, he's not going to eat the lamb there. He'll fly away, and it could be a mile away further, he'd eat the lamb. So you don't know, like the foxes blame for a lot, but it could be the eagle too, like.
Yeah.
We can't say that he's harmless either. I don't know who moors.
Yeah.
They told the stone about the throwing a stone from the upper lake right across the Purple Mountain, and it landed below at the back of the Arabutus Cottage at the Auger Lake. You'd see the stone, it's resting up against a cliff. A lot of the tourists will ask you about the stone, that it's unusual looking, the stone resting up against the cliff. And we always tell the tourists about the stone that the O'Donohue's and the McCarthy's threw the cross. And that stone is there waiting for a volunteer to throw it back again.
Donald, you wouldn't tell visitors a story like that.
No, would I would not. No, I would not. But you know, there was a fella, he was a boatman in the Europe Hotel one time. His name was Paddy Dial. Very nice fella. And Paddy said he went up in a wave one time outside the Europe, and he could see Lady's View up in the wave. He could see over the Purple. The wave was so big.
The
poor visitors.
I know, yeah.
But a day like today, I mean, it is perfect, it's calm, it's dry, there's blue sky it's over us. It's cold, but if you're well wrapped up, it's a perfect day to be out here.
It's lovely today. Yeah.
You're going to take us across the lake to Dirrenawad.
We will go across the lake and over around the islands. It's lovely over there, yeah.
Great.
And do a bit of embroidery.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Special places of Jeannie Tagney of Geramine in the Black Valley. Today's programme is recorded on November the 20th. Your story on Jeannie's special places. Text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 712 3666. Donal Ducks O'Donoghue of the Gapadon Law Traditional Boats brought us across the lake from Dougra. We're now closer to where the Queen's Cottage or Hyde's Cottage was at one stage, where we're joined by the former regional manager of the National Parks and Wildlife Service, Paddy O'Sullivan, the man who opened up a wonderful path from Terraconaghy to the oak woods around the southern shore of the Upper Lake to Lord Brandon's cottage. Donald, you've taken us to places that you've never been before.
No man's land in here.
The Galway's River.
Galway's River. It's lovely up here, Frank. I haven't been up here now in a couple of months, to be honest with you. But it's lovely up here, Frank. And the church is just above us here. Yeah. And the people from the valley in the old days used to come across by boat and they'd walk up to the church.
Jeannie, we'd go on in the river here and almost to the Queen's Cottage. There's too enough water. If the river was shallow, you'd have to stay down here on the mesh and walk up. There's a path up there along the bank of the river. There's a little bridge up there then, the timber bridge. We'd cross the timber bridge and up a little bit. We'd take a shortcut up through the wood and then take you on up to the church.
Indeed.
The Reconhead Church.
Paddy, what first attracted you to this route?
Well, when I became manager, one of the things I was conscious of was that it was necessary to open up the national park more to people and to make it more accessible. And there were lots of areas that there were paths, but the paths were not what you'd need for general access. And, you know, so I walked all the different paths. And I remember walking this with my wife a couple of times, and I was absolutely fascinated by it because it was an iconic historical path, like Jeannie said, a mass path. And it wasn't, I remember I brought Pat Foley, who was the assistant manager, with me, and we came in a Jeep because we weren't going to walk, and I wanted to show him we could drive maybe a third of the way in the Jeep. And when we went along in the Jeep, the path was so bad that the wheels of the Jeep got stuck between rocks and pulled the tyre off, and we had to get fellas to come out and bring us back and replace the wheel in the Jeep. It was that bad.
Yeah.
And so it was necessary then to go and look. And we were lucky at the time as well in that there was a bit of money. I bought machinery for the park, dumpers and track machines and various stuff. All that. And we had the staff, and we were doing a similar kind of job in Glengariff and the Nature Reserve in Glengariff. We looked at it, and we got all our own staff and our own machinery that we'd got. And we started. It was a tough, hard job.
It's an amazing route. I mean, there is no other route like it in Killarney.
No, it's fabulous. It is absolutely fabulous, yeah.
Jeannie, you were saying to me that the oak woods here used to be a hive of activity. Your father worked there.
Oh, he did. They were cutting down the, I'd say, nearly all oak, making the charcoal. They would make the charcoal here at the Reconhaven.
Yeah.
They had a big furnace there.
There were a lot of people working there on that.
There was people from the Gapadon Law and all that were all coming up there and over the path that we call the Kerry Way, you know, go work in the woods here. No chance at that time when the cross cut. God knows the cross cut would go to two men if we were used to the cross cut. You would hear the sing of the cross cut because then she was cutting.
A magnificent painting of this route from a conifer grove up above near Luskonnock, painted by Jonathan Fisher in 1770 and again in the late 1780s. Paddy, it has attracted people for a long time. So as you said, there were old routes there.
Oh, there were, and there are paths, and you know the path that Jeannie is talking about coming up from Mass, that path is still here along, coming down here from the bridge down. But there were other routes through it, paths and tracks through it, and the path going up to the bridge above, up to the church, that where they didn't go out to the road and walk up the road, they went up, you know, by the river and up that way. Okay. You know, those paths were all still there. What we wanted to do was make the main path available and as available as we could all the way into Geramine.
Provided you have the money and the manpower I mean, it is possible to develop all sorts of paths. It opens up a place that most people living in the Killarney area haven't seen it.
You know? It's amazing, you know, this is one of the things I'm amazed about Killarney, but it's not just Killarney, it's everywhere else as well. It's down in West Cork and everywhere else. That people are going abroad, they're going to Spain and Portugal and everywhere else. And there's so many fabulous places near us, you know, that they haven't gone. Like, how many people have gone into Lord Brandon's? How many people have walked that path? How many people have walked the old Kinmare Road? Yeah. You know, these places are absolutely iconic and they're fabulous places and quiet and peaceful.
Tini, looking out from the islands out in front from Deran Awad, the McCarthy's, Ronan's, the Eagle and Duck Island, great places for eagles to nest. A famous engraving of the mathematician Philip Ronan fishing from an outcrop on his island with a black servant blowing a bugle as the boats passed on their way from Lord Brandon's in the late 1700s. Those early travellers, the people after whom the islands are named, they were amazing, weren't they? You were making the point that the cottage he had was very small.
He had only room for a bed inside the hotel. He was there for some time. When people got to know that this man was there, there were people started visiting the place. Some people thought it was some kind of wild man in there.
He was evidently, he was a famous mathematician. He wrote an algebra book. He was a teacher in Trinity College in Dublin.
So that's what he wanted, to be in a quiet place.
The story that I heard was that he came out one morning to fish in the lake and there was one other man fishing in the lake. It was Lord Adair, or one of the Dunravens from Adair. And he went back to the black servant. He says, "Pack, we're leaving. This place is getting too bloody crowded." Yes. Oak Woodlands, with the natural understory of Holly, the lake, the islands, Purple Mountain on the west side. Paddy, there isn't another route like it in Killarney. I mean, anybody who hasn't been here hasn't really experienced Killarney. And the Killarney that has been known to visitors and to what the Fort Viscount Kenmare developed in from 1747 on.
Some of these Oaklands, you know, you've your understory gone in lots of places because of the deer and the overgrazing by deer.
Yeah.
And it's something that needs to be addressed and needs to be looked at, because these places need to be brought back to the way they were.
It's a huge challenge though, isn't it? I mean, the numbers of deer all over the whole country.
Not just Killarney, this is everywhere. Yeah. But there isn't a perception really there, as far as I can see, by the people who should be knowing, to see how far down the numbers need to come. The numbers need to come way, hugely, way down. Hugely. And you're not going to do it with what we're doing, have been doing in the past.
Well, I remember somebody making the point to me on the golf course that they had enough grazing. They reckoned for about 15 deer. And at the time, they counted 150.
But it's the same everywhere.
Yeah.
The numbers are outlandish. Before I retired, I remember we had gone up to getting 400 deer a year out, and we were going to sustain that and keep it up. Mm. But that didn't happen. When I came as well, you see, the red deer were on the mountain, and the bulk of the red deer were on the mountain. But now the bulk of the red deer are now down in the grasslands. Why wouldn't they be? They'll breed far faster when they have better nutrition and better than, you know. Yeah. And the mountains have changed as well, isn't that? Mm. They were grazing of sheep in the mountains and cattle in the mountains. Helped the deer as well on the mountains, but when they left, the place got overgrown, and the deer don't want
no burning,
and you see, that's the other thing. You see, there's a whole lot of things. These things happened, you know. We needed to change some things, but we needed to control the changes.
Yeah. Paddy, this route is always different. I mean, the bog myrtle in summertime, early and late sun, different shadows and light. The mosses at this time of the year, an hour's walk in it. It would be hard to get anything better.
No, it would. Because, as you say, the variation of the oak woodland, and then you have the bog and you have all the various species. But the other thing is the peace and quiet and the views and what you see when you're there. You know, it's an iconic path. There's no doubt about it. And you'd be hoping that a lot more people would use it.
Yeah. Well, there are more and more.
No, I'm sure.
There are more and more,
But
it deserves many more people.
It does, but you see, the thing again is that, you know, even when you come here to the start of it, there's no real signage.
No, there isn't parking.
This is the problem.
Because it's much easier to walk down the road than to walk from the church.
Yeah, no, you'd imagine that a bit of a parking space outside, even if it was a small enough number of cars, because then you're opening it up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Ducks, there is room for all sorts of new boat trips. I mean, you never knew you were going to come up here today.
Well, I let you in a secret now, Frank. Rowland's Island and the coloured man. I remember them well. Because I was in the boat coming down the lake.
Yeah, go on.
See, you don't realize when I reach 99, Frank, I'm tipped over the side. And I go down to little land called Tiernano, the land of everlasting youth. And I'll stay for 3 years and I'll be back again, a young man. So I'm down 3 or 4 times now, Frank, and I'm running out of time. I think when I go down this time, I'll forget about it.
Jeannie, did you know you were going to hear a story like that this morning?
I did not. And I thought that it was half diff, but God knows I'm not so diff at all. I'm out to hear it all, I think.
And he came in there and I was standing there up on the little Cunacan, and what I said to you was, Tame and Shaw Ik Shasavar Cunacan in Ik Far in the Shelliga. And that's the beginning of Tiernanog, of Fionn and Tiernanog. Law on Saurabi, Brass Saurabi, Vina, Fionnagus Nafina, Ik Shasavar Cunacan in Akala Kilarna, Ik Far in the Shelliga, Nura Cunacan Kuha Og Van Allen, Agassi Ig Markiak or Acht Bon, Mission Eve Kinora. And I have a daughter called Otra. So.
Fantastic. Paddy, thanks indeed for talking to us.
Thank you.
Very good.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
In the Black Valley, where Gene Tagney is taking me to some of his special places. We're now at the toll gate entrance to Lord Brandon's cottage. We're joined by Gerry O'Grady, a man who tells me he walks the path all the way from Derry Cunahy to here 3 times a week in the walking season. And of course, he's got historic associations with the valley as well. Jeannie.
Now the toll, if they go in over the bridge to go on the boats, mm-hmm. by whatever landlord are there, mm-hmm. now a fair tariff there. Oh, 6 pence. That was big money that time.
Gerry.
When I was younger, I used to come up here for my summer holidays, up to my cousins up just slightly over the road here. Mm-hmm. And the toll gate was the place where the gap trip finished, we hoped, as young fellas. But if we saw another crowd coming in on the boat, which meant we had to go back up to Kate Kearney's again with a second turn. I was a pony boy for 3 summers.
Do you make good money?
Tips.
Yeah.
No pay, just tips. It was a very enjoyable time. You can imagine a townie coming out into the heart of this wonderful country with the iconic horses, saving the turf, cutting the hay. It was incredible.
We're looking at the round tower recently conserved at Lord Brandon's, Jeannie. Lord Brandon was worried about his own safety.
He had a chain across the river, down as you come in off the lake. Each link is about 6 inches long.
The round tower.
That was security, a lookout tower. Have a good look down the lake, at all the boat on the lake. Mm-hmm. I'd say he'd be there to meet the people on it.
The tower was also, I suspect, used, because it was a gamekeeper's cottage close by, to look out for anybody who might be poaching deer or salmon.
I certainly have no recollection of poachers living up in Garamine, Jean. I don't think you would either.
Lord Brandon, or one of the Crosbys who were associated with here, having an unfaithful wife, and that she was detained in the tower for an extended period. Jeannie?
I wonder, had you 3 wives?
I don't know about that.
I think you had.
It would soften the energy you might have for any other activity if you were detained there for a while, wouldn't it?
Oh, something about that man having 3 wives.
Was that?
Had you that one chained in?
Yeah. Oh, you think he had wives at the same time?
Huh?
You think he had 3 wives at the same time?
The one you talk about, that's she was chained in and said that tower by him for a while.
Yeah.
She was, it's a. She'd be like the cock in the morning crowing, now she get out.
The NPWS have done a wonderful job in the conservation of the tower recently, haven't they?
It's a lovely job. It's a lovely job. And it was a good job they done it, because there were trees growing out of the side of that tower. Could have fallen down in a very short time.
Gerry, your family associations, as you were saying there, your grandfather lived here. Had the family lived here for generations?
My father was born here in 1915. My grandmother and my grandfather, they moved into Killarney in 1921. Mm-hmm. My grandfather worked for Lord Kinnair. Then our cousins, the Tangneys, my father's half-brother, Peter Tangney, So they were obviously remaining here. So we used to come back here on holidays and come back on weekend trips and so on. So
and had generations lived here before that?
Yeah, my grandfather, his birthplace is in a place we were mentioning a while ago called Grady's Bridge, which is just the bridge. If you were taking the road to Miles Gap, now it's distinct from the Gap of Dunloe. It's just below us here.
Yeah.
So the family lived there for generations, and some of them lived back the valley as well.
Jeannie, salmon fishing here. There's a fine pool just beside the bridge here.
That is a good pool there. I never seen anybody kill the salmon at the hook of salmon there.
My.
It's funny.
And do salmon rest there? Do you see salmon there?
You will see salmon there.
Yeah.
But they're just waiting for to get the water right to run through again and go on for the Black Valley.
Looking after visitors here for nearly 300 years.
When I was here in the early 60s, the Gap was a busy place.
Yeah.
And the tourists that came through here, I think what was remarkable was the number of repeat tourists. You would get families coming back year after year and probably making off the same jarvey as the pony boy as they had the previous year. So relationships were actually built up as well in that way, you know.
In your years here, is there a particular memory?
I often said, Frank, that short legs make for long journeys, you know, and when you're 10 years of age and you're guiding a horse through the Gap by the bridle, you're on your feet and the tourist is on the back of the horse. I'm talking about the actual saddle horses now as they sink from the trap. Having to go back up that 7 miles with a second tourist was certainly something you didn't encourage.
Oh, so you didn't welcome people coming up by boat?
Well, I didn't welcome them. I know that my uncle Peter certainly would have welcomed them because there was a financial income.
Yeah.
No, certainly from my point of view, when I saw boats coming in full and I was having to go back up to Kate Kearney's another 7 miles, that wasn't a welcome development.
Yeah. Jeannie, all of your years as a pony man?
I often left Kate Kearney's walking. At that time, you could have 30 horses out before you.
My.
Coming through the Gap of Dunloe. And the horses all walking well, they have the bunch of cattle riders on their back. And that horse may be biting at the other. That's why you tell me to look out.
Yeah.
In case any of the riders fall off.
Over the years, many, many times, looking at the horses going back, once they turned at the top of the Gap or wherever, the horses took off. Obviously, they were being fed when they got back to...
Oh, they were all being well catered.
One of the really interesting views that you would get going through the Gap at that time is once the turns were finished and you had a couple of dozen saddle horses. Now, they weren't all possible to be brought home by somebody individually. So you'd see the horses with the bridle pull back behind the saddle, and then the horse would simply be tapped on the rump and he'd find his own way home. And the reason that the bridle was pulled back so that he couldn't graze and he couldn't drink water.
Oh yeah.
So the head would try to go down all right, but there was only one place to go, and that was home.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you could meet 10 or 20 horses coming against you riderless.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
with the bridle behind the saddle.
I remember the pace they were coming back at from the top of the Gap. Obviously, they had dropped the visitors, or the visitors were walking back, but they went like the hammers of hell.
One in particular did, and that was Dennis Moriarty. Donny Coffey used to ride for him, Gene, if I'm not mistaken. They had a horse which I'm assuming was a half-bred, probably a chaser of some sort.
Yeah.
And when the last of the tourists had left Kate Kearney's in the morning and the initial contacts of the photographs had been developed, then he would ride up here to be up here ahead of them.
Yeah.
To show them the proofs and then to place the orders. Yeah. So he had to ride literally like the Pony Express to get up here to Lord Brandon's cottage before the first horse, which might have left an hour before him, got up here. So certainly that was a fairly exciting sight to see in the Gap.
Indeed.
But the horses themselves, they were fairly well placid horses, weren't they, Gene, most of them?
What they were doing every day.
Yeah.
But the horses were well used it. And we were too, walking day after day.
The big change, I suppose, in recent years is the fact that there are now no longer any horses for riding. It's all and trap.
No more riding for it. No, it's all traps. So insurance with the property, and they won't take us on anymore. We're lucky that they take us out of the pony and trap. Mm-hmm. They've cut out all the riding ponies.
But it's a considerable annual expense now.
Oh, very expensive altogether, yeah.
How much for a trap?
Up to €3,000. Yeah, it's very expensive for it.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd be often wondering, you know, who you're working for, or what the other, nothing happening. yeah. after paying out all this money.
If it weren't for the fact, Jerry, that the season is so much longer than it was, it wouldn't be possible to pay that kind of money for it.
Definitely not. And I'm not quite sure, Gene, are there fewer operators on the Gapnell than there were back in those days?
If you went way back in my father's time in Adelaide, there was a lot more javis than him. It would him there was over 50 javis here.
How many are there now?
It is down now to under 30.
Why is that? There's a good living for a couple of months, presumably, there, isn't there?
They just got old and died off.
Yeah.
When he heard about him.
Jerry, just before we leave, it's one of the great trips, isn't it? There isn't an experience like it, not only not in Killarney, but anywhere else in the country.
I think it's absolutely one of the great trips in the world, to be honest. Yeah. I know that the mountains aren't like the Grand Canyon, or some people think that they're... We're getting a chorus here behind us.
Yeah, good. That's to the atmosphere. It's cheap country.
It is an incredible trip. And of course, it used to be a full day trip when a jaunty car would pick you up at your hotel in Killarney and bring you back to Kate Kearney's cottage. And then you'd travel through the gap, and then you'd travel through the lakes, and then your jaunty car picked you up at Ross Castle and brought you back to your hotel. And in between, you were fed and watered. So I would imagine it was probably from 9 o'clock in the morning until probably 5 o'clock in the evening.
And it's a pity, in fact, that that option is not still available, isn't it?
No, it's all rushed now, you know. Everything is, I'd say it's probably no more than a 3 or 4 hour trip now at the end of the day.
Yeah. Teeny, is the trip like you'd have it to be?
It's a pity how the Javier from Killarney used to come to the Gap. It's a pity how that day out.
Yeah.
That come from the hotel to Kate Kearney's and the jaunty car.
Have the roads got too busy for that?
They get too busy, but the bus take over anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe the Jarvis and Killarney weren't that anxious for it. It could be a Kenway day trip for them.
Yeah.
Going back to Kate Kearney's.
Yeah. It's a great story. Jerry, thanks indeed for joining us. Thanks for coming all the way out. Sure. We move on.
All right.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
Welcome back to the Black Valley, where Jeannie Tagney of Geramine is taking me to some of his special places. Today's programme was recorded on November the 20th. Your story on Jeannie's special places for later programmes. Write Frank Lewis, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. Text 083-300-3300 or phone 066-7123-666. In this second hour, we'll visit the Black Valley Church. The parish priest helped with the building in the 1950s. The Derrygarv Bridge, where the salmon are starting to lay their eggs. On the bank of the Clahernoosh Lake, looking across the entire Reeks Ridge. And to begin, we're now at the quay at Lord Brandon's cottage, bringing us by boat on the upper lake, the managing director of the Gappadun Low Traditional Boat Tours, Donald Ducks O'Donoghue. In this quiet, remote place, hidden away under the shadow of the McGillicuddy Reeks, a place where sheep farming was the traditional way of making a living. But for nearly 300 years, it has been sheep farming and tourism. Visitors from all over the world come through the valley on horseback and travel on by boat through the three Killarney lakes. Doug, your earliest memory of collecting visitors here at Lord Brandon's and bringing them down through the three lakes?
Around 69, Frank, or 70.
56 years ago?
55, 56 years ago. I was a really young fella and I was in with Sandy. I was a spare man. So if one of the lads didn't want to go in such a day, I'd be brought in. And I was a spare man for nearly 2 years. Then I was in with Sandy and then and John Connor and Dodo Sullivan. And I got into that crew and that's who I was with then forevermore. So, yeah.
All of your life it's been a mainstay?
All my life, Frank. I never did anything else, really. I used to work in a bar in the winter time and taking over. And I had a taxi in the winter time. They're all gone now, Frank.
The season has got much longer now, hasn't it?
I actually don't stop anymore, Frank. I'm nearly gone 12 months. Yeah. Nobody. Yeah. It was different long ago, Frank, because it was, first of all, it was rowing. And secondly, the boats were all timber boats, Frank, and they were big, heavy boats, and they had to be dried out and everything. And, and there was four men in the old days rowing the boats. You see, there was four of us. Now it's one-man job, Frank, and the only thing that had stopped me, really, is the old Weir Bridge, if the water was very high. high.
Yeah. There was something about the paddles, though, the sound of the oars on the lake compared to the engine.
It was something else, Frank. Yeah. Four oars hitting the water together. And there was good fun in the boat as well. And the man in the bow was in charge of the boat and he talked to the four people in front. And the man down here in the stroke had talked to the 18 back here then. And the other two in the middle were pulling like the hammers they held. And well, they were supposed to be pulling like the hammers they held.
Jeannie, the first time you brought ponies or a pony and trap to Kate Carney's?
I started after 18 years old. And at that time, a lot of riding ponies, we'd walk after the horses then. You might have 20 horses before you, and you walk after them. If you weren't there, some of the horses could turn back. Walk all the way up to Lord Bandon and the people going to the cottage and have some tea and coffee and go on the boat then.
Yeah. You'll have a special celebration next year. I mean, you'll be celebrating your 80th birthday.
I will. I'll be celebrating
my 70 years of doing.
I'll be 80 years in March.
Ducks, thinking back over all of the trips, over all of the years, is there one that stands out?
Jeez, there was a couple, I suppose, really, Frank.
Go on.
Hay racing days and then
do you remember
some great days, you know. We came out one day into the Lower Lake and then we went up to Derby's Gardens. We were rowing at the time and John West was in the boat, John Connor, his name was.
Yeah.
And John said, look, we'll cross. And the wind was west, northwest. And we shot across and went halfway across. The wind howled. The wind howled and the people were nervous in the boat. And I was saying to you about the oars hitting the water and the west side, the wave had run up along the oar and virtually 4 inches away from the boat, you know.
Gee.
We knew that the boat would rise up with it, but the people in the boat didn't know that, you know. And there was people off and got off the boat, Frank, and they kissed the ground. And they said they'd never
they were glad
forget
to get away from
me.
You.
They'd never forget me as long as they live. Yeah. I'd leave a very lasting impression on them.
But it can be hair raising, quite especially.
Oh, can you have to be careful, Frank? You have to be careful. Yeah. Rosary was said on the board a couple
the rosary,
of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rosary. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh God, make me better, and I'll never drink again.
How long did you hold on to the pledge?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were great boatmen. They were great characters.
Jeannie,
I've met a lot of Americans. In fact, I'd say I've met from all over the world. A lot of people come back and they'd be looking for me. That's it. We have met you before, and Pratt and I did thank him. Yeah. I wouldn't thank him if I met him yesterday. Everybody, you're taken through the gap and lower and doing this long trip. The scenery takes everybody's eye.
Thomas Fort Viscount Kenmare started it all in 1747, nearly 300 years ago. And he changed from when the copper business collapsed and the mines weren't going to make any more money. They had to do something else, and he planned it all. He was amazing, and he was a young man at the time.
Mm-hmm. It goes
back a long, long way.
I carried Mr. Lever a couple of times in the boat, but I carried him on one occasion in the early 70s, and then we were rowing, of course, at the time, and he had a guide in the boat with him, and I think I was actually talking, and he was had the guide interpreting, and we got off the boat on the other bank over, and we were walking up the bank, and he came up alongside me, and he caught my hand, and he put this into my hand, and I didn't know what it was at the time, and I thought he couldn't understand English, but he could understand English.
Yeah.
And I got up and opened my hand, and it was, as I thought, it was 100 German marks.
Yeah.
This is in the early 70s now.
Yeah.
And it was 300. We were rowing to the gap in the early 70s for 10 shillings a day.
Yeah.
This was equivalent, I think, because there were four of us there. Yeah. There was split between the four of us. I think was equivalent to something like £64.
It was
a show money. Like
the season is much longer now.
I remember when the school did open in September, the season was partly over. We're running till November now. The season has got much longer.
Does it start much earlier as well?
Start Adelaide, you could have ducks up here in February. I have seen ducks here on Christmas Eve.
People, they can't understand that you rode the trip. And it used to take 3 hours and 3.5 hours and 14 miles up, 14 miles down, 28 miles a day.
Every day
we
of the week.
We were forced to do very special training. We were forced to train on Guinness's stamps. Every evening we go into the nearest public house and we drink 1 gallon of Guinness. We'd come out the following day and I just find we were getting 28 miles to the gallon.
The 4 hour boat that were carrying 28 people.
A fishing experience that you'll never forget?
I got 4 salmon there one day in February or March years ago. And I played the fifth. And I lost him. I lost the fourth and I got the fifth, I'd say.
Yeah.
But the biggest salmon I ever got, Frank, was 14 and a half. I never got a big salmon. I got a lot of salmon in my time. I got a trout, 14 pounds, a brown trout. I gave him to my great friend Dermot O'Leary in the flask.
Indeed, yeah.
He wanted to stuff him and put him up in the wall. 2 years later, anyway, no sign of the fish.
Yeah.
And I says to him, where's the fish? The chef cut him up by mistake and sold him as a salmon. I said, you better compensate me now, so.
Did you ever have the experience? I remember I've told the story before, but when they were building the spire in the cathedral, one man who had got a present of a pair of binoculars.
Yes.
And he was looking out on the lake and... And one of the boatmen, anyway, if he caught a couple of fish, he might drink a couple of them on the way home and tell the wife he caught half the number.
Sure, of course.
But he was looking out in the lake, anyway, and whoever one of your colleagues was out, and he caught 5 salmon that day.
Yes.
And on the way home, your man, the binocular man, met the wife and said, there'll be a great night tonight. And she said, why? She said, he caught 5 salmon out in the lake. Your man came home hours later and he says, the wife said, got a great day today. And he said, it was all right. So, and he got 2 fish.
When the story was told one time about the salmon jumping into the boat.
Yeah.
And I thought it couldn't have happened. But it did happen with myself. With a trout, it was a stormy evening, and it was so windy. And the young lads were with me, and they were sitting in the floor of the boat, and I had to sit from the wind. Mm-hmm. The wave was washing into the boat, and just the next thing was the flapping around the floor of the boat. What was it? A brown trout.
You're a mighty man. We've been out on the lake for 2 hours, I suppose, at this stage. It was amazing.
But it's a beautiful day and we're in a lovely place.
Absolutely. We're very lucky.
You can't beat it.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much for it.
Thank you.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals. Available in store.
In the Black Valley, visiting Garamine man Jeannie Tagney's special places. We're now in Our Lady of the Valley Church. We're joined by Susan Tagney. Over the years, her late parents, Mikey and Eileen, looked after the church, a duty now taken up by Susan and her sister, Siobhan. In 1955, when the Church of Our Lady of the Valley was built, you were 9 years old, Jeannie.
I remember the driver of the tractor. When we were going to school, the tractor would be going out and all the grades and lot bandings in the evening for material. And that gives us a drive. That gives us a drive in the tractor.
Because
the first time we ever got a drive in anything beyond the pony and trap.
Susan, did you grow up with stories?
Stories about they walking over the pass, the Derrickinahe for mass or on the boat. I suppose it's probably harder for the people at the other end of the valley, 5 miles in.
Yeah.
They were dedicated to their religion and going to mass and fasting, so it was a long day, you know, for those people. We heard the stories, all, you know, especially I suppose when we had the church here the next door when we were younger, you know, get up for mass, you know, you didn't know an hour day when we had to walk so many miles, you know, we didn't get that. We heard that story a lot, like.
Gidi, the parish priest at the time, Father Sayers, took a very active part in building the church.
He did, yeah. You wouldn't think he was a priest at all. He'd have an old cap on him, a good working hard man that he was.
In the book that you brought out in the church a couple of years ago, there was a photograph of him, I think up on the roof here when the building was going on. He was helping with the roofing.
He couldn't go any higher. He wasn't afraid of heights at all.
The people of the Black Valley, people living here, are very attached to Our Lady of the Valley Church. A lot of the building was done by volunteers.
There would have been maybe one or two men that were paid.
The man then with the pony and car, they would draw the material out from inside the bridge over the landbank to the park, and the tractor was collected there. Then they were making the concrete block and all over and inside the bank of the river. And draw the blocks out, and then the pony and car, John Mariotti, the gap, and he was there with the tractor and take the blocks back at the danger of Alvey from Beaufort for the building.
Uh-huh. Susan, I mean, the people of the Black Valley, people living here, are very attached to Our Lady of the Valley Church.
We have Mass on a Thursday evening. There's no Mass at the weekends. Small community now. It's a chance too for people to meet and catch up as well.
So. And the fact that the Mass is on a Thursday instead of on Sunday or Saturday evening, that doesn't put people up, doesn't discourage people from
coming to Mass? Absolutely not.
So you reckon the congregation is as large as it would be on a Sunday?
It would be, 10 to 20 people.
What is the population of the Valley now?
Between 60 and 70 people.
Jeannie, how important do you think the church is now for the people of the Valley?
Very important. If you had any church here in the Valley, I know the people around where they go to Mass at all.
Yeah.
The church is too far away. It could take too long to get to Mass.
Yeah.
So it's good to have a church at home, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, of course.
Close by, yeah.
What's your memory of walking up to Derrynconee to Mass?
Always going on a boat down to Derrynconee over to the Queen's Cottage. If it would have started me morning, then you'd go out to the Moat River. And if it would start me, you'd have to turn back. But just after turning back, when we get back to the house, the parents, they'd make you three rosaries.
Three rosaries?
Three rosaries. Got no one to tell, but three rosaries because we weren't able to go to Mass.
Yeah.
I remember it well.
Susan, is there a happening in the church that particularly stands out for you?
My farthest back memory, I suppose, even for myself, would be making my first communion. At the time, they were painting the inside of the church. Sometime in the mid-80s. That's my farthest back memory. On the day my dad passed, we did bring him into the church here and we said some prayers before he left because he was very dedicated to the church, you know, himself.
He just passed away a few months ago.
He passed away back on the 10th of August. Himself and this fellow Timmy beside the dog.
Yeah.
They faithfully, you know, the two of them would have gone every night to lock up the church and would be the first thing in the morning after the cup of tea, go and open the church. His mother did it before it. She was handed the job of when the church was built. She looked after it and she rang the bell and twice a day, wasn't it, Jeannie? At 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock.
Yeah, the ambulance. Yeah.
You'd hear it all over the valley. They'd say, Henny the Hall is out. She's ringing the bell.
So three generations.
Since it opened, in 1955.
Jeannie, is there a particular memory?
I remember well of the painting the outside of the church. They thought that 8 gallons of paint might paint the outside of the church.
Yeah.
As Susan said, this was all voluntary work again. I was involved with a lot of this painting, It wasn't brushing, it was daubing onto the wall, it was daubing. And I remember well, it took 32 gallons of paint.
Paint
the church. 32 gallons? It took 32 gallons of paint.
And you were expecting it to do it in 8 gallons?
I thought I might do it in 8 gallons. I remember one morning, I was away out the mountain and checking the sheep and see was there any foxes around. And they were coming home and about 9:30 past, and the priest, he was just at the landing here. And he thought that I was here maybe to help him for the day.
Yeah.
And he stood outside the right man inside in the right place. Jeez, I tried explaining to him that I was not eating no breakfast and that I was out. Oh, he said, I'll lean and put up the breakfast for you. He had me cut again. So on out to Eileen, and Eileen put up the breakfast for me. And I just sat with him for the whole day painting, daubing this bloody wall. So I was well sick with it. I was well situated.
So you didn't come over early in the morning any more times?
If I did, I'd duck him.
The place names round about here, GD, I noticed that three of the place names are associated with the cuckoo. There's Glown, Cook, Ngoch, there was Luck, Goch, and there was Laka, Goch. Were there a lot of cuckoos here? Was that the reason?
There was plenty of cuckoos. Anyhow, I use a cuckoo, they're usually hazel trees.
Do you particularly associate the cuckoo with the valley?
Oh, yeah. The reminder of summer's coming. Yeah. You know, the 26th of April. This year we probably hurt her maybe a week before. Yeah. So yeah. Maybe that was a sign of the good weather. So we'll be looking out for her earlier next year.
How long is it since there was a corncrake?
I never seen a corncrake in the valley.
No.
No, I never seen it. There was no corncrake in the valley. It's a,
why? Even way back?
No.
Because I remember them in Killarney in the 50s and 60s, I'd say. Certainly the late 40s and 50s, and even the early 60s. Not here.
No, you had no grain fields in the valley down.
Yeah.
All the day in the valley was a potato garden. That back in our father's time, our grandfather's time, the good grain.
Yeah.
They'd grow the wheat and grow a bit of oats or the horses. You'd see these ridges away out the mountain there. They grow the wheat in them ridges. And that was the reason for growing it up the mountain. And if the landlord seen your grain, he'd take it off of you.
Oh, yeah?
He'd take the grain off you and he'd sell it. He'd leave you nothing.
Yeah.
If you don't know, if you've seen the grain, he'd send out his men and take the grain from you.
Hares, the pine marten, there's so much wildlife here.
An awful lot of hares. Not much rabbits.
Yeah.
The rabbit is down the lowland and the earth where he can make his burrow. The mountain hare. He'll go way out the mountain by day and come down at night and you'd see them in the fields and by night. Mm.
Did you ever see them dancing? You know this thing about the
and I did. They danced, I go around their hind legs. Inside in the middle of the field you can see a horse show ring inside in the middle of the field. People often wonder what is this about, you know. But that is the male hare holding in a few of the females, keeping together. And if one of them broke out he'd bite her, make her get back into the ring again. And he might have been there for maybe a week.
Oh, yeah.
Holding in the females. People be wondering about this horseshoe ring in the field.
Yeah.
But the hare does that, biting, keeping in the female.
And do the male hares fight to compete for females?
They wouldn't, they bite. The red stag will do the same thing.
Yeah.
With the hinds, keep in a bunch of hinds there. One limb break out.
Yeah. It's amazing, Susan, isn't it, the things that are round about us.
There is, like, you know, so much wildlife, and coming up into the fall this year, the beautiful colours of the trees, the
wonderful,
you know, and the
long autumn.
Yeah, it was, you know, and it was, you know, it was just beautiful and just does make you realise that we are very lucky to live in such a beautiful place.
What kind of a year was it? You run the Black Valley Youth Hostel.
Myself and the family, we look after that. So yeah, it was okay. Yeah, it was. We opened from April till the end of September. But yeah, it was an okay year.
So if anybody comes at this time of the year,
we're closed.
Have you self-catering houses?
Yes, we do. For the lone hiker, they're not this time of year. The weather's not suitable, really. Myself and Jeannie spoke earlier about the pass coming up on the Kerry Way, which majority of people coming through the valley would be to walk in the Kerry Way, you know, with the lot of rain we've had the last couple of weeks, you know, so it's not suitable for hiking this time of year, really, and it can be dangerous.
Yeah. Susan, continue the work in the church. Thanks indeed for talking to us.
No problem. Thank you very much.
The
Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer-ready meals available.
The special places of GD Tagney of Gairamean in the Black Valley. Today's programme is recorded on November the 20th and 24th. Your story on GD's special places. Text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 713 666. We're now at the bridge over the Black Valley River, Jeannie tells me, where we're joined by Mary Sheehan, conservation ranger in Killarney National Park. Jeannie, are the salmon running yet?
They are. The salmon are spawning, actually. No.
Yeah.
They'll spawn from here till Christmas. There's salmon on that curl at the moment. if the water fell a bit, you'd have salmon spawning actually under the bridge here. This is a good spawning patch here. This is known as Ahelan.
Ahelan.
Ahelan. A lot of salmon spawn here in Ahelan. Uh-huh. Even though the stream below that in a small river.
Yeah.
It's known as Glacier. And salmon go up there and they spawn in Glacier.
Aye.
I do. When some want to spawn, they're going to stream even.
Yeah. Mary, it's fascinating to watch over this bridge as the salmon digs a hole, I suppose, in the gravel on the bed of the stream to make a place to lay its eggs.
Yeah, I suppose salmon and trout species, they create these reds. And from now up until Christmas and beyond, they'll be digging these out and laying their eggs. And of course, the salmon and trout are very important in terms of biodiversity around these areas, but also they're interlinked as well with the freshwater pearl mussel. Very important bivalve in both Kerry and in Ireland, and I suppose in Kerry we're a hot spot for the freshwater pearl mussel.
Isn't it fascinating to see the female salmon though actually digging out the rest in which to lay their eggs using its tail?
You wouldn't realise the power that these fish have until you see them swishing the tail and digging these, and they're quite substantial in their length as well. They can be up to about half a metre in length, and they need this bed of fresh gravel in order to lay their eggs, so it's really that substrate here is quite perfect for them.
Jeannie, have you ever caught a salmon up here?
Oh, I haven't caught salmon, no, but you know, there's mostly fish for trout. I don't marry little salmon fishing, but for trout fishing.
What kind of size trout would you get up here?
Well, we get trout up to pound weight.
Gee, that's a good size trout.
You'd hardly get them now. The trout fishing on the way down. I'm talking about 40 or 50 years ago.
Yeah.
You might catch a dozen trout. Huh? If you had about a dozen trout, you'd go home and put it in the frying pan.
Yeah.
You'd have bloody fine feed in the brown trout and that's to do it.
Yeah. What size salmon would you expect to find here, do you reckon?
Usually the salmon of the upper lake are from 8 to 10 pounds. You can get an ad heavy salmon.
Yeah.
I remember a brother of mine one time, he got a salmon up to 30 pound weight.
My, where was that?
On the upper lake.
Yeah.
Down in Kingsborough.
Yeah. Mary, why was finding, is it Aylworth so significant?
Aylworth, aquatic plant, it's quite rare. You'd only find them really in Kerry and in Connemara in Ireland. This plant hadn't been found in a good long while until Paul Green of the BSBI came down here this summer to investigate and try and re-find this plant. And the funny thing is about this particular outing is that everybody arrived in wetsuits, dry suits, waders, everything you can imagine to get into the water and start looking for the plant. And we arrived here and there it was on the side of the lake.
In the Black Valley?
In
here?
Yeah, exactly. So that was the aim of the whole meeting. Then we went off to find other plants. But Aylworth, it's a small little aquatic plant. It's really, really small. It has little leaves. They're like little awls. And it has a little flower that's only 1 to 2 millimetres. If that doesn't open, it will self-pollinate underneath the water if it doesn't get an opportunity to open. Its favourite habitat is about 1 metre. And the thing is, the water quality here is so good that you can find Aylworth here.
And how rare is Aylworth in the country generally?
So, like I said, you'd only find it really in Kerry and Connemara. And just to say, I suppose the other place where they looked for it and found it as well was in the new park, Lashuntamara and Kiri as well.
Yeah.
The following day, they went there and they found that plant there after it had not been recorded for a number of years in either of the two spots.
Yeah. Jeannie, round about here, the place names tell a lot about a place. The name of the river, the Derrigarv, Derrigarv, the Clahernoosh, Mohelan.
Clahernoosh is just across over there now, uh-huh. Up on the hill, over into the park here, then the forest there, Derrigarv. There's a building there, and Derrigarv.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And the mountain behind you there, the one with the slanted on this side, the peak down at the end of the valley, that's not Brazel, is it?
Brackle, it could be.
Yeah.
Back here, I'm not sure of all the names back here at all.
I know. Yeah.
So where you're looking back is back in Bunbine. Uh huh. Yeah, that's Bunbine, the mountain, way back there.
Uh huh. Uh huh. Mary, seeing Hooper swans during a birdwatch swan census,
the Hooper Swan Survey is carried out every 5 years. It's done with Birdwatch Ireland in conjunction with the National Parks and Wildlife Service. So back in 2020, I wasn't familiar with this area at all. And so that gave me the opportunity. We were doing the whole of County Kerry at the time with some other conservation rangers. It was magnificent. I didn't even realise that Hooper Swans, that you could see them in this part of the country. I more associate them with Cloragan or, you know, maybe North Kerry.
Yeah.
But it was wonderful to see. There was about three Hoopers at the time. And I noticed actually over subsequently that these Hooper Swans either are in this lake or sometimes they move up into the upper lake and they feed on aquatic vegetation. So they're probably feeding on the allwort.
Yeah,
I was talking about.
They make a wonderful sound, don't they?
Oh, the hooping sound, it's so beautiful to hear. And especially, you know, coming into autumn when you first hear them flying over in their formation, you hear them contact calling each other. It's fantastic, quite evocative and quite beautiful.
And how long would they be here for? What sort of season generally?
From October to about March. So they winter over here. I don't know too much about their movements within Kerry, but certainly part of the flock that are here move to the upper lake, especially in January. You might see one or two of them. The last two winters, particularly when it's been really cold, when there's been ice and frost, I've seen them in the lakes. And even last Stevens's Day, there was a Hooper Swan up in the upper lake.
My. Have you seen them here, Jeannie? Have you, the Hooper Swan?
Oh, I have, yeah, on the upper lake, a dry hard spring. They can come up here to the Black Valley and hatch out here in the Black Valley lakes.
So it's more late in the winter than towards springtime before?
Yeah, if you're in for dry weather, they like to hatch up here in the Black Valley.
Tell me something, a raven can symbolise wisdom and magic and prophecy and transformation, but it's also often associated with death, with trickery and ill omen due to the black feathers and association with carrion. Jeannie, what does the raven symbolise for people here in the Black Valley?
He's not a friend of ours at all, the raven.
You see, now what would he do?
Raven can dive down, bite an animal.
Oh, would he?
He can dive down and actually break an animal's back, especially lambs.
Yeah.
That catch him in the back and break their back, the raven. No, the raven not like it at all.
He has an evil eye.
Yeah.
Evil eye. Mary, before we move on, is it possible to come across choughs up here?
On one of my outings here to the Black Valley, I came across some chough. So it's quite likely that you'd see chough, especially around Brazel Mountain. Currently, there's a student in UCC. She's studying chough. So any information that any members of the public can have, if they can let us know if they've had sightings of chough, either to put in the Biodiversity Ireland app, or if they contact the rangers, they can pass on this information.
They're a very distinctive bird, aren't they? The jet black body, the red beak, the curved beak, and the red legs.
Yeah, like their Irish name, Cussy Darug. Red feet, and they have this beautiful, it's almost like a curlew type bill for probing the earth, looking for insects. So I suppose a short turf around the tops of the mountains here is a good habitat for them. Although they're more associated closer to the sea, I did encounter some chough here previously.
Yeah, have you seen choughs here, Jeannie?
Is chuff the water hen?
No, it's black body, a curved red beak and red legs.
No.
They're generally associated closer to the sea. You see a lot of them in Castle Gregory.
I've seen them
in the mountains down there.
I don't know. I thought it might be the water hen you're talking about.
No.
The water hen, they got scarce, they're only very scarce.
Has it?
And that's what the water hen have too. They can have red feet as well.
Yeah.
No, what you're talking about, I don't know that bird.
Yeah. So rare. We're going to move in. We're going to move into the first of the lakes, and we'll talk to you from there in a few minutes.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan's.
Now, our last stop in our trek to the special places of Jeannie Tagney on the bank of Clarnoosh Lake. I have vague memories of being out in the lake here 70 years ago with my father and the owner of the boat, Black Valley Man, Padder O'Donoghue. Jeannie, did you know Padder?
I did, I knew Padder too.
Yeah?
A small little fisherman.
He was, and he had his own boat here.
He had.
Yeah.
You'd need to be able to swim too when you'd be on that boat.
You certainly would need to be able to swim. I remember my father telling a story, but
having a good story was much more important than telling an accurate story. My father's story was that one of the days he was out with Pather on the boat, which was filling up with water. And my father drew Pather's attention that the boat was sinking. And he was told, take up the can and start bailing.
Yeah.
Were you ever out in the lake with Pather?
I wasn't. I don't think so. No, I never in the lake back here with Pather. I wasn't. Yeah.
But the boat had a reputation for filling with water then?
Oh, it had, yeah. You could have a good day's fishing, maybe a lot of trout. But when you go home in the evening,
yeah,
you mightn't have as many. And Pather would say, I got that gone out through the hole of the boat.
My father's story was that he was afraid that they were going to go down, like that the water was very close to the top of the boat.
That's right, yeah, down to the gunwale.
The wildlife for which Kumindove is best suited, what you might come across on a day here.
The wildlife here during the summertime, there's a lot of common sandpipers that nest around the lake shore here, or you'd often hear their plaintive little, their whistling sound. You'd also have, and I suppose all around the Killarney area, where you have lakes and rivers that rise and fall very quickly. In the summertime, we have this endemic species of flower called the hawkweed. And there's different types of, we have three endemic species in Kerry. Here and along the upper lake as well, you'd have one, you have the Killarney hawkweed, you have Scully's hawkweed, and you have the Kerry hawkweed. And so here you'd find, and it's only found here and nowhere else in the world.
The ringousel is a mainly European member of the thrush family. It's a medium-sized thrush, 23 to 24 centimetres, weighing about 90 to 138 grams. The male is predominantly black with conspicuous white crescent across its breast.
This part of Kerry, along the Migadcuddy Reeks and in the foothills of it, used to be a hot spot for ringousel, and it hasn't been heard in quite a while. So
not heard at all. So
yeah. So we're starting to use, I suppose, different technologies now to try and see can we locate if there's any singing males left. We do come across occasionally some males on migration. So there, about two winters ago, there was one ringousel. It was up on a holly bush and it was making most of the holly on its way in autumn up around the Torque area. Mm. For breeding ringousel, we haven't established if there's any pairs.
And the beak is kind of yellowish.
I just saw a flock of cormorants there taking off into the sky.
Yeah.
Beautiful sight.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Black,
beautiful.
Against the sunlight.
You were saying, Jeannie, there a few minutes ago that there's been a great feeding by the thrushes of the holly bushes that were quite heavy with berries earlier in the autumn.
Yeah, the thrush have landed, the mountain thrush is down, and he's feeding on the very northern moment, and the holly berry.
And they can eat a great amount of it, can't they, very quickly?
They can, but you have a big flock of the mountain thrushes too. You could have 100 or maybe more of the thrushes that could clean a bush in one day of holly berry.
As many as 100 of them would land on the one bush?
Maybe more. I've travelled all these mountains. I've gathered the sheep with my uncle, all right, out Crook Brassel, and on out to the top of the Reeks.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of mountain climbing, gathering sheep.
Yeah. One of the things I noticed on the way back is the huge increase in rhododendron here. Really spread. I mean, even just where we are, halfway down Clarnoose Lake, on the mountainside, they're almost a big patch altogether covered in rhododendron.
I've just seen the Mary that are here to stay.
This is outside of the national park. I suppose what I can say is in the national park, we have, we're working on the rhododendron clearance there. And anybody who's been on a visit to Tomy's recently can see the latest technology that we're
amazing.
Using there to clear the rhododendron.
Beyond here, Jeannie, almost joined to Clarnoose Lake is Cockhow Lake. Yes. And the last lake in the valley, in older maps, it was called Loch Rioch. But in a 1 to 20,000 map of the Reeks published in 2022, it's named Roisin Lake.
The small lake back in the very end, Roisin, So you have a lot of reed on the lake that down. That's how it got the name of Roisin.
Oh, so it isn't named after your granddaughter then?
It's the reed. It's the reed that got his name.
Not Roisin.
No, that. Oh, yeah, I know what you mean now. With Roisin, all right.
Yeah, you could tell her the lake was named after her, you know. Mary, if you were trying to impress people about life as a wildlife ranger, Is there an experience you'd tell them about it that would encourage them to take on the career? That you wouldn't be out in a kind of late November day in the cold and probably the wet even in the Black Valley?
No year is the same. No week is the same. No month is the same. There's always something to surprise you with, whether doing some conservation work in terms of protecting habitats and species, doing whatever you can, looking at new ideas, talking to the scientists, reading the papers, talking to the likes of, say, Eamon now and his, you know, ideas regarding different projects. And but also the when you're out there on the mountains and you could be working on rhododendron clearance, or you could be mapping an area for fencing or something like that, and something beautiful would come out of nowhere.
Like what? Have you experienced it?
Say, for example, I'm just looking here now. There's two
wonderful
Hooper swans flying past.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what all you can hear
you
them.
You can hear them, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. That's what happens.
And they're
coming, they're just doing
around
a circle around.
Yeah, yeah,
now.
They're putting on a special display for us.
They knew I would be here. Oh my goodness, isn't that beautiful?
Isn't that fantastic?
Oh, you can
hear
them hooping.
Yeah, yeah. They're beautiful.
There you go.
Wonderful.
That's
it.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah, I can say no more.
Yeah, we're broadcasting on the 27th of December. Jeannie, you're going to be 80, June, I think, is it?
I'll be nearly 81 then. I'll be 80 in March.
All right. Is there something in particular that you'd hope would happen here or something?
Well, I'd like to, my family, keep on the same tradition of the sheep and a few cattle, especially horses.
Uh-huh.
Now, we were brought up with horses. All Tangneys have a lot of liking for horses.
You started to go through the gap at 10 years old, so that's 70 years ago.
I did, yeah. Well, nearly all horseback that time. The toes were going horseback.
Yeah.
Trap was scarce enough at that time. But nowadays, should I know ponies now? It's a pony and trap you have now.
Any of the old photographs you see, there people are on horseback generally.
All horseback, yeah.
Yeah. Mary, it is a unique place.
School tours. In primary school, the one that stuck in my head the most was going through the gap, stopping off in Kay Kearney's cottage to get a few pens and pencils, and then taking the boat trip up the lake. And I'll never forget that experience. I was in class, and it was Master Walsh in St. Oliver's Primary School that took us on the trip.
Yeah.
I kept a diary. And,
oh, yeah?
And it's one of my diary entries. For weeks. There's nothing either side of it for weeks, so it really had a lasting impact on me anyway.
Jeannie, is there a particular story that you always used to tell, bringing people through the gap?
Well, they're in the gap with the Lord, mostly all scenery. It's describing scenery and a bit of a tale behind a few of them.
That's what kind of a tale would you tell them?
For the Echo Lake now, and you go up to the Serpent Lake of the Wishing Bridge.
Yeah.
And you would make three wishes on that bridge, and you pass the bridge and keep it a secret for 24 hours. And after 24 hours, one of them will come through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever check back with anybody?
Yeah, people have come back and they said, we have met a partner and we got married since.
Mary, thanks indeed for joining us. Thanks indeed. Jeannie Tagney's special places. I can't think of anywhere else in the world where you'd have the same range of experiences that we had while we were recording this programme. Special thanks to 79-year-old Jeannie. You're a mighty man and a fund of nature experiences. My thanks to Donald Duxadun, who brought his gap boat all the way from Roscastle, to Gerry O'Grady, who travelled from Killarney to tell us why this place is special for him, to Paddy O'Sullivan, who explained why he developed the unique path from Derek Cunahy to Lord Brandon's, to Susan Tagney, who told us why Our Lady of the Valley Church is so important for Black Valley people, conservation ranger in Killarney National Park, Mary Sheehan. And you heard about what she was speaking about that is so important in the valley. Special thanks to Tamale and Donica, who welcomed and fed us, and daughter, nine-month-old Roisin Mary, a symbol of the future in the Black Valley. On today's programme, Siobhan Lewis was programme coordinator and looked after location sound, and post-production was by Brendan Lewis, 4,849 miles away in Reno and Nevada, the wonders of technology. over Christmas, we will be repeating some programmes we broadcast during the year. Until then, I hope you're getting to walk and enjoy the amazing place we call Kerry. As we found last November, there are regular good days, or parts of days, that lift body and soul. From all of us to all of you, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to all of you.